Doris is a woman with a plan, and tonight we are in phase two that includes setups, spies, and bowling alley stick-ups.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, buzz.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the after show for Reprisal. Tonight we are discussing scene one, episode two of Flintlock and a Hound. There's so much to talk about because, as you know, a lot happens in these episodes. We were introduced to a ton of, like, main characters in the first episode. This episode, we're learning a little bit more about those characters. Following some of their storylines, we have Ethan's fight. We have the meeting between the opposing gangs. And we end the episode with an epic bowling alley stick-up and a car chase.
Yeah.
Before we get into that, I'm Latoya Blakely. I'm your host here tonight, along with my wonderful co-host, A Diamond, who is a crime and suspense connoisseur.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you for being here. Yeah. I couldn't do it without you.
I couldn't do it without you. And we couldn't do it without all of you. So thank you for sitting with us and chatting.
Thank you so much. let's just jump in and go to your general thoughts of this episode.
My general thoughts, amazing, action-packed, and yeah. That's about it.
I mean,
a lot of stuff in there that I'm excited to talk about. But yeah, action-packed, nice twists and turns. And I got to know a little bit more about some of my questions were answered.
Yeah. We started to get some answers. I agree.
Yes.
My overall thoughts, the same thing. It was a really action-forward episode. We got to see a little bit more of, like, Doris's strategic thinking. Mm-hmm. Some of the characters aren't who we thought they were, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, overall, I thought it was a very, like, busy in a good way, like, mm-hmm. entertaining, action-packed story that answered lots of questions.
Yeah. I agree. And how do we open Tugs?
So, last episode, we were introduced to Ethan. And we knew that Ethan was kind of on the run, and he hooked up with the Brawlers as, like, a safety spot, in essence. Mm-hmm. And so this episode opens on the scene at the restaurant, specifically in the bar.
I got an answer right then and there, right in the beginning.
Right? And so we have Ethan, we have Doris, we have a bar patron, and then we have a bartender. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you thought about that episode or that scene.
Yes. I got my answer. I didn't know what Ethan had done necessarily, and I didn't know. I don't think I connected the dots about their relationship or how they even met, Doris and Ethan. The patron was. It irked me just like that. The Colin character did, pushed it to the limits. Like, yeah, he maybe did deserve to get a little beat down to death. Probably not. But I thought the opening scene was amazing, and I got some clarity and some answers on that, so automatically felt more into what was going on.
Yeah,
right off the bat. Yeah,
I felt like that scene kind of reiterated what we talked about in our last after show from episode one. We kind of got the feeling that, like, Ethan was a good guy, had a situation, like, needed to leave town, and so I think that in that scene we got to see that he really was a good guy.
Yeah.
And he was trying to protect Doris, his coworker, and just get the guy to leave.
Yeah.
And when the guy left, like,
yeah, but I, you know, I kind of wonder, like, what else about Ethan do we need to know to make him, first of all, confront the patron and not just let it be?
Right.
And also to even punch someone. You know, there's got to be some sort of demons there. And then also to, like, continuously do it. So there is a lot of depth with Ethan, and I can't wait to figure it out. But the boy's really troubled. And I think he's probably had some troubles before that incident.
For sure. I mean, I definitely think you hit the nail on the head. the patron was definitely obnoxious, but mm-hmm. he was leaving. And so for Ethan to go out and to get physical and to get physical to that extent, I agree that there's something in his background and his history that we're going to find out that kind of led him to that.
Yeah.
Speaking of this fight, he gets arrested. He gets bailed out of jail and Doris is there to pick him up. And she tells him that this person has died and that the police are going to come get him and he's going to be charged with murder and so that he should leave.
Right.
What did you think about that?
You know, honestly, I didn't think much of it. I'm like, dang, he killed him. That he's done. But now your face is kind of indicating something that you might know something I'm not seeing. You gotta...
Well, I just right away wondered if he really died or if, like, Doris was seizing an opportunity to kind of set some stuff into motion.
Dang, Doris.
What do you think?
I think that's a good... That's good insight. And I wonder. I mean, because we might find out, like, at the very end, he was pulled in by her.
Yeah.
Through a lie of him murdering this person just so she could fulfill her plan of getting revenge. And she saw him as someone that could handle his own because he just snapped on somebody and beat the crap out of them to death. And she's like, this person could probably be my in and hang with the gang. So he's like a undercover and doesn't even know it, you know.
And that's a good point because I didn't think about that necessarily, that she witnessed this fight and that's what like made her say, wait a second, like maybe I could use him.
Yeah.
But I definitely did. Like my intuition right away was like, I don't think that good man job. Actually died. And we never hear anything else about it from like the police or anyone else. Like Dora says he died and then she immediately, you know, says like, hey, but I have somewhere you can go.
Yeah.
And then he leaves.
That kind of bring, I don't know, I may be skipping, but like, you know how they frame
Graham,
Big Graham or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you think that death or that murder was, I don't know. What did they frame him with?
I think that was.
Okay, I'm just being ridiculous.
Yeah. I think those were like separate issues. But going back to Ethan, so now he's with Three Rivers Phoenix.
Oh, the River Phoenixes, yeah.
Okay.
Three Rivers.
And we talked about it in the last episode. There was a fight at the club, right?
The fight at the club? Refresh my memory.
So, the meeting. So in episode two, we have a big meeting, right? Between the opposing gangs.
Yeah, out in the streets.
But the meeting was because of what had happened in episode one.
Right, the bar fight.
Right.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. So now we have
I thought you said club. I was like, oh my God, I'm not remembering.
The pinup club.
Yeah, the bar, like the dive bar. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
With the pinups.
Wait, are you talking about the fight that the Three River Phoenixes go in to initiate?
Maybe I'm confused.
That was just like a dive bar, but the Bangarang
bar.
Yeah, the Bangarang is the pinup club, and that belongs to the Brawlers. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a meeting. We're in episode two. There's a meeting, and there's a meeting behind the opposing gangs. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this was the first opportunity that we got to see more of Bash. And some more of Joel, but really, this was, like, Bash's moment.
And you got to see the dynamic between the two gangs, like, as a whole, that the Happy Ghouls are kind of in under the power of the Brawlers. Like, the Brawlers are the badass, fighting, gonna kill you gang, and they're ruling over the Ghouls. And you saw that, like you were about to say, with Bash.
Yeah. What did you think about Bash?
I think Bash is like he's so quiet that he's like a silent fart. He's silent but deadly, and he's gonna do some damage, or he already has, or something. He's like, I'm waiting to see what happens with him. He's a very interesting character, and I like him a lot.
He definitely is like the quiet person that like minds his own business, but
in that
comes
meeting,
out when he needs to, right?
Yeah.
So I think I think that Bash is, now I'm confused. Was Bash in his room prior to the meeting? Did Joel go get him?
I don't even know.
I'm not sure either. But what we've seen of Bash, he's pretty quiet. Like, he's always there. He's ready to roll when he needs to, but he's mm-hmm. always quiet. But when mm-hmm. they tell him it's time, like, mm-hmm. he brings the power that apparently no one else has.
Well, that's an interesting point, because in episode one, in the very beginning, he's very quiet. And even, you know, Catherine at the time, mm-hmm. she was like, are you going to let, like, aren't you going to do anything about it? And he's almost under the spell, and he's like going
Tunnel
to
vision.
Follow right he's gonna follow the leader's, like, whatever he wants to be done, he's gonna follow the leader. And so he kind of is in this, like, under the spell this whole time. Like, he will do what people tell him to do, or whatever the leader tells him to do, and he's gonna fight and do whatever. But the standoff, or that meeting when it's the brawlers and the ghouls standing outside, and they're like standing across from each other, that's when I see him as his own person, and his own, like, he has his own mind. Because he, like, pretty much took that guy from the other team and, like, dragged him in front of all the people. He was like, you guys won't do anything because look at what I'm doing right now. And yeah. I was like, okay, that's Bash. That's, like, he's terrifying.
Well, it's interesting that you say that he is under a spell. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't see it that way. Like, to me, I just think he's extremely loyal.
Right. And that, yeah.
But aware of what he's doing. You know what I mean? And so I think he's just driven by that loyalty.
Yeah.
And like I said, he's just quiet. Mm-hmm. And even when he shows up at that meeting, he's quiet mm-hmm. until he springs into action. Mm-hmm. And when he springs into action, it's like a confident, intentional thing.
Yeah. It's like that guy in the room who's, like, chill and laid back. He's, like, probably the most confident. Instead of the boisterous one that's always talking and trying to get in your face, he's like, just be careful of the guy who's just watching and observing everything. That's his character. And yeah. I love that, yeah.
Yeah, I like Bash's character. And, yeah, we learned a lot from that meeting, right? We learned that maybe the ghouls are a lot more talk than they are action, because no one was willing to cross right. that line.
Yeah. Except for that one person, and then didn't do anything.
Right. So that was kind of like, I thought about it.
He's like, not when I'm alone, because right? I'm the only one. Yeah.
Exactly. So we've learned so far that Ethan may be a spy.
Yeah, he's undercover.
He's undercover. He mm-hmm. doesn't know it. Mm-mm. He doesn't. Poor Ethan.
I know. Poor sweet baby.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure. I am pretty sure. Could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that was just a part of Dorsey's plan, and that man did not die.
If you just, like, predicted something, like, I think it's brilliant. I think it's possible. Yeah.
I think it's possible. And Big Graham.
Yeah.
You know, Big Graham is definitely a problem mm-hmm. for Doors.
Yeah.
He was a problem in season one. He mm-hmm. tried to take the restaurant. He knocked her around. Yeah. He basically threatened to kill her.
Yeah.
And now she has set him up for the murder of Colin. What do you think about
that? Okay, that's the setup. I think it's genius on her part. I love it. I want him to go away because I want her to, like, fulfill her plan, but also, what's he going to do now? Like, what are we going to see him in jail? Like, what's going to happen? Like, what's going to happen with him?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we learned that the detective.
Yeah, they go get him in the diner or whatever.
Well, and we learned that the detective was in cahoots with him.
Yeah.
And so we have Big Graham, who is this big gangster in Detroit. Mm-hmm. We learned that Molly and Doris are in this together. Mm-hmm. And that's saying a lot. Like, Molly gave Doris the okay to kill her husband.
Yeah. Like, how bad of a husband do you have? And kind of how twisted are you as the wife to be like, I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to make sure it happens.
That's an interesting perspective.
Like, I wonder who propositioned who.
Oh, no doubt for me that it was Doris.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't think Molly had that in her.
Yeah, that's probably true. Because, she probably hasn't even thought.
Probably never thought. Like, maybe on her best day, she's daydreamt of, like, what life would
bashing his head in. Yeah.
What would life be like if I wasn't under his rule?
Yeah.
But definitely, I think that Molly would have been too scared to even leave him.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. I'm sure that when Doris came calling and said, I had this idea, she had a sell Molly on it. I wouldn't imagine that Molly just signed on and said, let's do it.
No, she didn't initiate.
Right.
But I mean, what if Doris was like, this is the plan. We're going to set up Big Graham. I just rhymed. And then, and then, you know, they're talking about this. And what if Molly was like, how do I get out of this, though? And, you know, like.
Well, I wonder if.
Well, because, yeah.
The plan was even to set up Big Graham. Or if the plan was get rid of Colin and then.
We set up Graham and you're clear and free. And
right, because out. We're going to get rid of Colin. But
I have
now.
Those backwards.
Right, but how do we now get out of the fact that we've murdered this man? Well, let's set up Graham, you know, to take the the fall for it.
Yeah.
And so that, yeah, we find out that Molly and Doris have worked together. They've thought this out, because that's what I was thinking when I saw Doris shoot him. I was like, well, now what's going to happen? Like, what's Molly going to tell the police?
Yeah, exactly. Where are we going to hide the body?
Right? So I thought it was pretty genius that they had thought it all the way through and gone so far as to be in this together and say that, like, Graham is the one that did it. Yeah. So now Doris has to get rid of Graham because he's not going to take this lying down. Like, he's going to come back and fight, right?
Sets him up.
And so she sets him up. But unbeknownst to her, the detective, maybe the police force, more people in the police force are working with him.
Yeah. Well, and then it brings us to, you know, Big Graham's next move. So they're at the funeral for Colin.
Maybe it was a double funeral.
Maybe it was a double funeral.
I'm saying it was a double funeral.
You said that earlier, and I was like, were both their photos up there? I swear I saw both of them. Probably not true. I like to make stuff up. But so we see that Big Graham at the funeral, and he's talking to Molly's sister, who is a twin sister. I don't know. They look exactly alike.
They do look alike. So, side note. I've been on IMDb and looking at the actors and the characters, and I did realize that they reuse actors for multiple characters.
And so Molly is the beginning of that. Where else do they use
it
a double?
It could be.
Okay. That looks exactly like.
So it may be.
Yeah.
So then I wonder if they are supposed to be twin sisters. Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting.
That's not very explained, but maybe it doesn't matter.
But we'll find out later.
I guess we're just supposed to get it. Yeah, so he's talking to her, and he's like, where's your sister? It's a little weird that she's not at her husband's funeral. What's up with that? She's like, I don't know. I haven't really spoken to her. So then she goes and calls her, or Molly, she called, no, Molly calls
her. The sister, yeah.
And then Graham sees that. And current days, he *69's the number or calls the operator, finds out where they're at, and then boom, calls his lawyer. Not to say, hey, I'm in jail, but I need you to do a favor.
Well, the lawyer was at the funeral. And so prior to that, he had said, like, I want you to find them. And the lawyer was like, hey, I'm going to find them with no information.
Right.
And then they got lucky with this call.
Yeah.
So then he kind of sets the lawyer on the path of finding these missing women.
Yeah. The Dutch, trying to speak, learn Dutch lawyer.
Yes. So we see them at the hotel room. I think that kind of earlier in the episode, we see them in the car with Witch driving them away. So we know that they're leaving. Mm-hmm. They're going somewhere new. Mm-hmm. We then see them in a hotel room. Mm-hmm. And we get to see Molly kind of processing what has happened. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? And how do you think she felt?
Well, I think that it's finally hitting her a little bit, what's happened. But I also think that that's a moment where at least Doris could connect with her a little bit more, or they could feel connected a little bit more through experiencing a loss of someone. Because Doris lost her husband that she really did love, and now it's hitting Molly, like, even though he was a POS, that I just lost somebody I did once love, or who was my husband. So I think it was a moment where they could bond, and it was also like, uh-oh, for Molly. She's like, ooh.
Yeah, for sure. I'm smiling because I'm having so many thoughts. So I was listening to a podcast earlier. Dr. Phil was on it, and he was talking about how women or people get divorced, and then they say they miss the ex-person, the ex-husband, the ex-wife. And he's like, no, you don't miss them. You miss who you wish they would have been. And so that's kind of what I think about Molly.
Well, and it's an addiction in the brain, too. You're addicted to that person.
And the companionship and whatever else that you have. But Molly agreed to this. Like, she agreed to her husband being killed by Doris. And so it is interesting that now she's in the hotel room. She's processing it. And she's actually experiencing grief. Mm-hmm. And she's missing him and, like, recognizing things about him that maybe weren't so bad. And you brought up the point that it was a chance for them to connect. Mm-hmm. But I think Doris
didn't fully allow it.
Yeah, she's not really here for that, you know? Like,
but I think there was that moment that she at least had a moment where she kind of allowed herself to be in the situation of death and what she lost. because we kind of get closer into her face, and she's just kind of like starting to tear up a little bit, and is like in the zone of like, I lost somebody too, and it's but she doesn't allow it to take her over because mm-hmm. she has a big job to do. But I think there was a little piece of like I hope their relationship gets tighter, but it's just the beginning of, I think, a close relationship for them. And I think that was a little crack in the door for Doris to be able to connect with Molly a little deeper than
And see, I missed that. That would be another replay moment for me because I missed that.
I miss a lot. So thank God I've got pulled something out of this.
But I think it's a few reasons, right? Because her husband was sick. So she had an opportunity to prepare for what was coming.
Yeah.
For him.
Sure. Yeah.
As well as she's laser focused on like her mission now.
Yeah.
And so regardless of what she feels or could feel, I think that she has kind of like shut it down mm-hmm. so that she can stay focused.
Yeah, for sure.
On her purpose.
And that was clear. That was 'cause she didn't say much. And well, of course the door knocks. And right. So like anyways, she would have had to get out of that moment of a silence.
And I feel like Doris doesn't know if she can trust Molly.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if trust is even in her mind. I think it's like Molly is just such a small thought in her head, really. Like,
my only comment to that is, how small of a thought can she be if you two just colluded to murder someone and then left town together? So now you're stuck with this woman. So she has to be a bigger thought than that. But before we go any further, a diamond has something to say to all of you lovely people.
Yes, guys. You know what? If you're on YouTube watching us right now, please comment. Like us, subscribe to our channel, subscribe to our show, subscribe to ABTV, everything. You know, if you're on iTunes, rate us. Tell us what you think about the show. Also, we're on Twitter, Instagram, everywhere. Find our show. Please subscribe, like, and share.
Please do. Please do. I'm like, where do we go next? Because there's so much that's just happened. I guess we can go back to the pinup club for a minute. Mm-hmm. We have Meredith, who we met in the first episode. Mm-hmm. Queenie mm-hmm. is now there. We've learned something about Meredith. Mm-hmm. She sells drugs. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Well, we learned how she does it, like how she kind of makes her way through her club. Clientele and all that stuff. Yeah, because, yeah.
So what do you think about all that? Just Meredith, Queenie, the drugs, the fact that it's not okay, right? Like,
yeah, I'm like, why are you selling drugs? I get it. You probably make a ton of money already. Like, what else do you need out of what else are you getting money for mm-hmm. that you are going to go against your father, right? She's a daddy's girl. And then go against...
But where's daddy?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's what I was asking the moment I was born. But hashtag true story. I'm like, what are you selling drugs for? What else? But I liked to see her flowing through and her little druggy sidekick flowing through the bangarang yeah. and selling to the clientele. But... it catches up with her really quick.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about Queenie?
I think it's a perfect role for her.
Okay.
And it's nice to see that actor out of orange attire and, you know, with some face makeup on and all dolled up, but still be that hard-ass, you know, character, but also has this mothering aspect of taking care of all these girls and making sure nobody's picking on them and they're doing their shows and... You know, and then when they have that, when Queenie and Meredith have that moment together in Queenie's, or in Meredith's trailer, mm-hmm. it was nice to see a little softer side, you know?
I like Queenie. Yeah, because she is motherly. She's like that.
Oh, you don't? Or you?
No, I do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She's the mother hen, and mm-hmm. she's also like the mediator between the men and her girls in the club.
Yeah.
You know, like she protects the girls in the club. She listens to the men and she does what she should do, but within reason. And she tries to keep everyone.
Yeah, she's still very much her own person.
Right.
Like she's also someone who has a say because she's running that club that is running everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's that's their moneymaker. Right. So she is a big voice in the leadership roles too. So I loved that. Yeah. Yeah.
So we learn that Doris is trying to build a team, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We have Ethan, who mm-hmm. I suspect is a spy, and that Doris intentionally set into motion and mm-hmm. sent him down to the brawlers.
Yeah.
And we see her meeting with Bolo mm-hmm. at the bowling alley.
Yeah.
What did you think about him?
Oh, God. I loved his character. I loved the way he was. I loved his dialogue. I loved the emotion and the rawness and arrogance. But I loved the character. I really loved it. And but, you know, the whole time she's keeping her composure. And that is her jam.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't react. She sticks with her focus and her goal. And she's cordial and polite and firm. I mean, just the woman I want to be. Like, just the woman. I just love the way she reacts to him.
Right?
Yeah.
And the way she talks, and she's so prim and proper.
Yeah.
And she's like, but that's all the money that I have.
Yeah. I'm sorry to disappoint.
When they're negotiating. Yeah.
She's for good, sure. Yeah.
He was a bit much. Some of the men in this show are...
Like, what do you mean a bit much? Like,
just... The same thing, kind of like Big Graham. Like, he doesn't care that he's talking to a woman. He's in her face.
Yeah.
Raw, maybe a little threatening. Like, you give me what I want. I'm not here to play games with you.
Like, true mobster mentality.
Right?
Yeah.
But she does. She keeps
These
her
guys
composure.
Are murderers.
Yeah, but we've learned that, like, Doris is too. So,
yeah.
Watch out.
Yes, I know.
And so he.
It's a good contrast to see this manly man, like, just. And then, like, loud and firm and, you know, this, and then her, like, firm and, you know, but just cute and, you know, positive, but, you know, focused. So it's a good dichotomy to see.
I mean, we're so far away from the next Halloween, but I really think that I want to be Doris.
Yes. Please keep going on the episodes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so Whit warned her and said, like, mm-hmm. he's not going to be willing to help you. And it turns out Whit was right. Mm-hmm. Bolo was not interested. Mm-hmm. And anything she was trying to sell.
Yep, he checks his watch. He's like, oop, gotta go.
Right.
It doesn't even...
Whit excuses himself to the bathroom, and then masked men come running in.
Yes, blaze, guns a-blazing. But here, the moment that they come in, I loved her reaction. And I loved the way the camera was following her. She's just sitting in her chair. The camera's just following her, and she's just watching them walk through the... bowling alley, do their whole stick up to the poor guy in the front. I mean, such a great scene.
And then she follows them.
Yeah,
to the back.
You see it in her eyes. She's like, bingo, there's my team.
But then that makes me go back to Ethan, and I didn't make the connection at the time, but the way she saw an opportunity in those two guys.
She was just staring through the window, watching him beat the life out of that man.
Is the same way she saw an opportunity
yeah.
in Ethan,
yeah.
which then potentially validates my point.
Yes,
that
I hope it's true.
It was another setup. She set Ethan up.
Yeah.
But the bowling alley, she sees these guys. She follows them out.
Mm-hmm. Falls him into the back.
Right.
Because she's like, then when they come out, she's like at the end of the hallway. Like
just
from...
kind of horror movie-esque.
Yeah, like the two twins from, what's that, Red Rum movie? And they're just like, I want to play. Kind of standing like that at the end of the hall. Totally creepy.
I mean, she has some... She has some...
And doesn't do anything, right? She's
no.
just like... She's like, just continues to watch. And then... Well, then we get into the...
Car.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. Now everyone's fled the scene.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the guys?
The two guys?
The robbers, yeah.
Well, I mean, first of all, when they first came in, I was like, I thought they were just sticking up the bowling alley, trying to just get a few bucks out of the cash register. And then, of course, we find out, he's like, show me the door.
Yeah.
And then they take him all the way back. And then we find out that's where... Mr. Bolo checked his time, and that's where he was going to do these gambling, to play poker or whatever.
Yeah.
And then that's what they're really after. So not only, they're not just two random guys, maybe junkies or whatever, trying to like stick up for some dollars, but they are guys with a plan.
Yeah.
And they're there for something bigger.
Yeah.
And they stick up a whole room of dudes who have guns in their pocket, two of them and 50 guys. I kept thinking, like, somebody's gotta be able to just pull a gun in just one shot. I mean, maybe he gets shot and that's it, but nobody does anything.
You know what I really learned about the two, the robbers in that scene, was that they were really smart. Because they tried to trick him. You know, they asked for the briefcases, and they were like, we only have two. And they were like, no,
they knew.
You have four.
Yeah.
And then you're right. When the guy tried to pull the gun, he saw it.
Yeah.
Don't make a move. Don't even try it. So that's what I learned from them, that they were also very strategic and, like, very smart. And they weren't here.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So maybe they will be good teammates maybe for Doors.
Do you think that they're actually going to let Miss Prim and Proper even get close to them?
Well, I would imagine that all criminal...
they I'm come like, together the word?
No oh. But they're very protective like paranoid and hesitant and I don't know you rival gangs, that's what this is you don't trust anyone that's not in your gang or anyone who just approaches and says they want to be a part and if they agree to let her in, I'm sure that there will be a high price to like get in there.
And I didn't know if I didn't until the end when she gets in the car and goes after him. I didn't know how she was gonna I don't know if she was going to call them later, find out somehow, do research and discover that it was them and then. But she's, about to chase after them.
Yeah, she's going to chase after them.
Yeah.
Maybe she's going to
with a bullet hole through the window.
Next to them, swerve her car in front of theirs and make them get out.
Tokyo Drifts and donuts all the way to the,
So tonight, we have a special segment, and we are talking about film noir.
Yeah.
I don't like to get things wrong, so once again, I'm just going to read the definition for you. Film noir is a term used to describe stylish Hollywood crime dramas, particularly those that emphasize cynical attitudes and sexual motivation.
Oh my God, you said that.
So, a diamond, what's your favorite film noir movie?
I'm going to definitely say, so I saw this movie back in 2016. I went by myself to an indie movie theater. They were serving craft beers. I went by myself and I saw a movie called Raw.
Okay.
And it's basically about this family who has a secret, and that secret is they eat humans. So the movie is full of, so this young girl who just goes off to college at the same college her sister has been at for many years, she goes off, and that's when she discovers she enjoys meat. Her mom kept her a vegetarian all the way up to that point, and then she gets that desire and taste for meat. So it's a gory movie where they're eating flesh and tongues and, but it's so beautiful. It's a French movie. The writer and director is the same person. It's a female writer and director, and it's so well done.
It's so interesting.
It's so, so good. It's, beautiful dialogue, beautiful scene, beautiful storyline. It's amazing. But it has that gore and that
cannibalism. That's interesting. I am sticking with my 1980s movies. I am a big fan of those movies. They were hot. They were passionate. They were these sexy, strong women who were willing to boil rabbits to get what they wanted.
Oh.
But my movie is Body Heat. And like I said, it's just 1980s movie of strong, sexy women. Uh-huh. Very passionate.
I've never even heard
of
that.
Yeah.
So, maybe.
Well, that's my noir movie.
Wonderful.
We are about out of time.
Dang, already?
Already. Ooh. So I just want to say thank you for watching us.
And you know what, guys? My name is A Diamond Baker. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at NotYourType, NOT_YUR_TYPE. Check me out. I've got this is a fun life. You know, just have fun with me.
Maybe on the next episode, we can find out why her name is not your type. But until then, you can find me on Instagram at LaToya.Blakely or on Twitter at Blakely.Latoya. I am also on a couple of other after shows, Servant, which is an amazing show. Watch the show. Check us out in Stumptown. Thank you so much for joining us. That is all for this episode. Until next time, buzz you later.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.